Prabhisram Vishnupad Shila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Ananta Kota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premsaika Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shudvaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sisi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gobadan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Sri Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Sri Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Purushottama Chetra Ki Jai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi Ki Jai, Sri Mad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Gaura Premanand. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaura Premanand. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So we're on Canto 8, Chapter 22. Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. And this is text 5, which I just realized that. Studied up the wrong verse, but anyway, we'll do this. Okay, so chapter 5, Twam Nunam Asuranam Na Parokshaha Paramo Guru Ya Anuneka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshur Adishat Tvam Nunam Ashuranam Na Paroksha Paramo Guru Yonaka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshur Adishat Tvam Nunam Asuranam Na Paroksha Paramo Guru Yonneka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshur Adishat Paroksha Paramo Guru Yononeka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshuradishat Tvam Nunam Asuranam Chan Paroksha Paramo Guru Yononeka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshuradishat Tvam Nunam Asuranam Tana Paroksha Paramo Guru Yononeka Madandanam Vibrahamsham Chakshuradishat. Ladies, Tvannunamasaranamna Parocha Paramoguru Yoneka Madanandanam Vibram Sham Chakshuradisat Tvam Nunamasaranam Paroksa Paramoguru Yononeka Madandanam Vibram Sham Gunadisat Tvam Your Lordship Nunam, indeed, Asaranam, of the demons, Naha, as we are, Parokshaha, indirect, Paramaha, the supreme, Guruhu, spiritual master, Ya, your lordship, Na, of us, Aneka, many, Mada Anandanam, blinded by material opulence, Vibramshat, destroying our false prestige, Chakshuhu, the eye of knowledge, Adishat, gave. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Since Your Lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, You act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige, by chastising us, You give us the eyes by which to see the right path. Please repeat, since Your Lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, You act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige, by chastising us, You give us the eyes by which to see the right path. Purport. Bali Maharaj considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead a better friend to the demons than to the demigods. In the material world, the more one gets material possessions, the more he becomes blind to spiritual life. The demigods are devotees of the Lord for the sake of material possessions. But although the demons apparently do not have the Supreme Personality of Godhead on their side, He always acts as their well-wisher, by depriving them of their positions of false prestige. By false prestige, one is misguided. So the Supreme Lord takes away their position of false prestige as a special favor. So, Krishna is always good, very kind to everyone. It's not that if one is a demon, that's fixed. A demon can become a devotee. And Prabhupada said, a devotee can also become a demon. Demon, devotee, these are designations. But the real essence of a person is that he's an eternal part and parcel of the supreme spiritual whole. So Krishna has no enmity towards the demons, only apparently so. But as the Supreme Lord of all, the owner of all, the enjoyer of all, His position is fixed. Yeah, it cannot be budged. So He has no anxiety. In the material world, everybody's in anxiety due to fear of losing everything. it's well founded. You do lose everything. But for the persons who are shrouded in ignorance, the loss of something is a reality. For a devotee, it's not. A devotee never thinks I'm losing something or I'm gaining something if he's fully engaged in the service of the Lord. He just goes on under whatever conditions may arise and remains steady in his devotion to the Lord's lotus feet. But the demons, they're always anxious. If they have something, how long they'll be able to maintain it? Or if they lose something, when will they be able to replace it? But they're never happy within their hearts. So one of the symptoms of devotional service is that samsara dhavana lida loka, the blazing fire of material existence. That means hankering and lamenting, wanting and rejecting. That's all quenched as soon as one takes up spiritual life. Then immediately that's the first effect. Your heart becomes very pacified and calm. Then whatever happens, that's Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada, in July of 1976, visited the Soho Street, He visited the Bury Place Temple. We did actually visit the Soho Street Temple as well, but it wasn't a temple at that time, it was a pub. You know, where people go drinking, but it was up for sale. And the devotees, Jai Tirtha, took Srila Prabhupada on his visit to London to see that Soho Street building, and Prabhupada gave the approval to buy it. But Prabhupada, anyway, to get back to the point, went on to Bury Place, where Radha, London Ishwara, were in residence. And he gave a very nice class. At that time, the city authorities, and especially the people that lived next door to us, were very angry because of all the noise coming from this building. After the devotees moved in, then there was constantly noise, right from 4:30 in the morning till 9 or 9:30 at night. So the neighbors hated that, and they were protesting loudly and trying to bring some legal action to force us out. Just as an addendum, I can't remember who told me this, whether I read it or I heard it, but the city were doing some kind of census to find out how many people were living in the city. So the census officer came to Bury Place, and he knocked on the door. A devotee came out. So the man said, "We're doing the census. We want to know how many people are living in this building, because normally, you know, three or four a family, five or six, like that." So the devotee said, "Just wait a minute," and then he went off. Then when he came back, he said, "53." So the census officer couldn't believe it, 53 people in this one tiny place. But that was the situation in those days. Devotees were cramming in wherever they could. The point that I was going to make is that the demons, they're always trying to attain more and more. And the devotees, even if they lose everything, they remain pacified. The demons are always agitated. The devotees are pacified. So Prabhupada told the devotees there in Bury Place, "Don't worry about this, you know, impending legal action." He said, "If they throw us out, then we'll live on the street. That's all. Or under a tree." But we have no attachment. If we lose this building, Krishna will send another one. So that's the mood that's always there for the devotees. They're undisturbed, dira. Whatever happens, they accept, or they can understand or see that Krishna is in control, always. There's not a time when he's not. And Krishna always favors his devotees. So in that way, there was another story I heard. There was one devotee, I think he'd been Prabhupada's personal servant. Might have been Purushottam. I'm not sure, I'd have to check that. But he came to India for the first time in that first wave of devotees in 1970. And he got really sick, as practically everybody, all the Westerners. When we first came to India, it was par course that you would get really, really sick. Dysentery or malaria or something. So this servant of Prabhupada's, he got really sick. All he could think about was going home or going back to the West. And Bhavananda told me he walked past his room one day. This is in this same Calcutta building. And he was just lying there on a straw mat. And this boy was rolling around saying, "Krishna, why are you doing this to me?" He wasn't happy. "Why are you doing this to me?" So that's not the mood of a devotee. Yeah, mood of a devotee is quite different. We've read before where Narayana Para, what's that verse? Narayana Para Dharmo. Anyway, the idea is that the devotees of Narayan, even if they're living in hell, it doesn't make any difference to them. They're quite happy. Yeah, this was spoken, Maharaj Chitraketu, that interaction. He was cursed by Mayadevi. So he smiled, "Thank you very much." And then he went on his way. And then Mayadevi was very surprised. And she asked Lord Shiva, why is he smiling? Anybody that gets a curse from me, they're finished. So why is he smiling? So then this verse, that the devotees of Narayan, whether in heaven or in hell, they're always happy because they have the chance to serve the Lord, and they see every situation that they've been put into as a direct arrangement by the Lord to purify them. And what does that purity mean? It means giving up that sense of, you know, ownership and ownership and what was the other one? An enjoyment that whatever's around us, yeah, it's not ours. A devotee knows that. If he loses something, he's not lost actually. It's just part of Krishna's energy. And it's Krishna within the heart moving things in a certain way. Yeah, but for our benefit. So a devotee always feels that he's getting benefited or is getting the blessings of the Lord, even if apparently to an ordinary person it looks like, you know, the devotee is being punished. Or sometimes, you know, non-devotees, they say, "Well, you glorify God, you know, you're surrendering to God, but I see you're just the same as everybody else." Yeah. You just, what's the difference? I'm getting old, you're getting old. I'm getting diseased, you're getting diseased. I will die, you will die. What's the use of being a devotee? You may as well go out and enjoy. But you're suppressing your enjoyment. Yeah, you're trying to follow this so-called God of yours who's not really doing anything for you. And you're giving up all the things that are enjoyable in life. Meat eating, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex. Yeah, you've given these things up, but what have you gained? Nothing. You're just the same as us. But actually, they don't see the relationship that the devotees have with the Lord. And that ignorance is the true suffering. Yeah, to be ignorant, there's no worse suffering than to be in ignorance. So the demons, they're in ignorance of the fact that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is manifest by Krishna, including their own selves. Yeah, Krishna, from his point of view, every living being, he loves as dearly as any other living being. Billions and trillions and uncountable souls. But Krishna expands himself in such a way that he can bring pleasure to any living being. Yeah, it's for him, that's his existence. He's always enjoying. So even when he's interacting with the demons, he's still enjoying. And for the demons themselves, this is a mercy. To have Krishna come, one of Krishna's representatives come, and they say, like a sadhu, cuts. So it hurts to begin with. The devotee or the Lord himself cuts off the bondage of the living being to the three modes of material nature and gives him the opportunity to come back to himself and serve him in a very pleasurable and loving manner. So in this way, the demons, it's their own responsibility in one sense that they're in the position that they are, but the devotees have compassion. Even if somebody's very sinful, the devotee has enough compassion, he sees him as a spiritual being, not as a sinful being, and he tries to help him to recover his memory. This is the position of the guru, that he's so much, this is Guru Kripa. So the guru has so much mercy on the living beings. Even if the living beings reject him, abuse him, it doesn't matter. He's still praying for the welfare of this living being, that Krishna do something to help him. Yeah, this is the essential difference, that the devotees, they have this great mercy, causeless mercy. And they always try to do something for the benefit of others. So Bali Maharaj here, although he's now aware of his natural position as a servant of the Lord, so he's not suffering, but he sees that his demon followers, they're still suffering. So he's praying, do something for them. Same as Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah, when Hiranyakashipu was shredded, I mean literally shredded, Prahlad Maharaj was asked by Lord Nrisimhadev, now whatever you like you can have, I'll give you any benediction that you want. He didn't say, oh well, give me the whole universe and I can enjoy. Yeah, he said, there's a rascal here who's forgotten his relationship with you, please rectify him. He's my, ostensibly he's my father, but actually he's just a bewildered soul, so you kindly help him and bring him back to his right position as your loving servant. So this is real compassion and this is real mercy. Yeah, to give somebody that sense of who they really are. Because if you don't know who you are, you're basically stuffed. Excuse the expression. Yeah, if you don't know who you are, then you don't know what you're to do. You don't know where you're going. You don't know where you've come from. What have you got left? Yeah, it's a crazy position, and Prabhupada says that karmis are crazy. Yeah, so in these pastimes when Krishna appears, he comes not just to benedict the devotees, because they're already worshipping him anyway and they're happy being in any condition of life as long as they can remember Krishna. Yeah, so for them, you could say it's not that, it's not exactly for them that the Lord appears, but he especially appears to rectify these demons, those who have gone away and are suffering. Now he wants to do something to help them. He wants to compassionately deal with them. So if that's the case, then why is he, you know, getting involved in these fights all the time with the demigods, between the demigods and the devotees? And why does he appear to favor the demigods and not the demons? So it's only appearance, that's the point. Yeah, everybody's a spirit soul, everybody's Satchidananda. So an apparent chastisement of the Lord, a devotee takes that It's not as a chastisement exactly. He may have a reversal in his life, but a devotee feels, now I'm getting purified. This is very nice. Yeah. No matter what situation I'm in, I'm connected to Krishna. He's working to help me and to, you know, bring me back to his lotus feet. So the devotees, no problem. But when the Lord comes in the material world, he especially comes therefore to rectify the demons. Yeah, to do something to help them. He has that feeling of compassion. So Bali Maharaj is having this nice reciprocation. Prahlad Maharaj is also there. And he's making the situation in such a way that the demons can finally realize what their proper position is, and then they can be relieved of all of their anxiety. Yeah. So Bali Maharaj, it says he did not divert his attention from the Lord, even though, you know, he was apparently in the worst position possible. He'd lost his effulgence. I like Prabhupada mentions that he lost everything. He even lost his effulgence. I remember seeing one time when I was on Sankirtan in Australia, the Prime Minister, he came to visit that city, and I just happened to be nearby distributing Prabhupada's books, and I saw this commotion, and then I saw the Prime Minister striding down through in the middle of the road with the whole, you know, coterie, a whole gang of helpers and, you know, supporters, and he was practically shining. Yeah, he was full of himself. He was so full of himself and how great he is. It was almost like he was shining. He had some kind of effulgence, and everybody was, you know, looking at him and couldn't take their eyes off him. So you can get that even in material life. Yeah, you can get that kind of, you know, situation where you appear to become very effulgent and powerful and opulent. Yeah, everybody does my command. But it doesn't last. That's the point. Yeah, it goes away very quickly. And I saw when this Prime Minister, he stopped at the point where he was supposed to be giving his little, you know, booster talk to the general public. There was another smaller crowd, some farmers or something, and they brought some boxes of tomatoes, and they started throwing tomatoes at him. Yeah, so he had to stop and go somewhere else. So that's material, you know, opulence. Yeah, somebody may like you, but actually everybody's envious of you because they want to have the opulence that you've got. So if people, even if they gain some opulence, they're always afraid of losing it. Something might happen. Either the, you know, people will vote me out at the general election, or like President Nixon, he was found out to be cheating, so he was booted out of office before he finished. They said he actually had a nervous breakdown. It wasn't widely publicized, but when they actually, what's that word? When they kicked him out of office before his term was over. There's a proper word for that. They impeached him, thank you. He was impeached. And then he had to resign, and I remember seeing a picture of him. It was a big helicopter, and he was standing on the top steps with his V for Victory. The man had just been the first president to be impeached in history. He was finished. Yeah, victory, victory. Madman. So the situation in the material world is not very good. Yeah, we sometimes get something, but more often we lose it. Even if you get something, you know, it's going to be taken away in a very quick manner. And it's a burden. Being somebody else, or trying to be somebody else, is a burden, because it's not natural. You are what you are. Yeah, but therefore you'll see a lot of these Shudras, just like Robin Williams, or Prince, or Michael Jackson, or all these big, big stars. They call them stars because they illuminate. But, you know, after 5 or 10 years, they end up overdosing, taking drugs, because their life has become such a burden. Being always famous, wherever you go, you have no privacy. Whoever you see, they expect you to do something magic. Yeah. Or as one of my godbrothers, who was a multimillionaire when he first joined the movement, he said, this is not Ambarish I'm talking about, somebody else, but he said, he was doing very well, he was worth a few million, but he saw through the whole thing that it was all shallow, and he got tired of people hanging around him who were anonymous friends. It's an oxymoron. If you're a friend, that means you have some closeness. But when you're rich, you have lots of anonymous friends. Right? They think, they try to stand near you, as friends. You don't even know who they are. Who is this person? So anonymous. So this is, material life. It's not a good proposition. You're always a loser. Always losing. So Krishna, he comes just to help us to get out of this illusion and this suffering and bring us back to the natural position of true enjoyment. Real enjoyment is when you don't have anything. You only have Krishna. Yeah, that's the real satisfaction. Then you can be anywhere, anytime, any situation, any kind of association. It doesn't matter a fig. Yeah, you're doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna reciprocates with his devotees, and that's your eternal ananda or bliss. So in that way then, Bali Maharaj doesn't really care now, because he's had a realization, the Lord is everything, I'm part and parcel of him. He doesn't really care that he's tied up with the ropes of Varuna. Yeah, he's lost everything. His soldiers, they're cursing him. What? We fought so hard for you, risked our lives for you, gave you the kingdom of heaven, Indra's seat, and this is how you repay us, by giving it back? They were very unhappy. Yeah, but he was very satisfied that by this apparently harsh action of the Lord in arresting him, that he had now become relieved of this illusion of thinking that he was some great personality and could challenge the Supreme Lord. So this is, a good example. Prahlad Maharaj also, as we say, is a good example. He was unhindered, unhampered, a Haituki Apratiyata. Yeah, when he was attacked by his own father, he just very patiently bore it. How could he do that? Because Krishna was with him. Yeah, Krishna was in his heart, and he was looking after him. So boiling oil, being trampled upon by an elephant. I mean, there's so many ways that you can die. But Prahlad Maharaj wouldn't die. Yeah, and whatever Hiranyakashipu tried to do, it had no effect on him. So that made him really, really angry. Yeah, where do you get this opulence from? This is an opulence that even I don't have. So he was very, very envious. So, in the same way, Bali Maharaj, because he's coming in the same line as demons, he's also very satisfied. He's not at all unhappy that everything's been taken away, even though, as I said, even his effulgence was dimmed. Yeah, but in that condition, his mind remained fixed. And this is what we're aiming for. As we practice our devotional service, to get to this point where the mind becomes fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, no matter what. A devotee never blames the Lord for anything. He always accepts this is, for my benefit. Perhaps in the past I've done something very wrong. Yeah, we must do actually. So now he's come to rectify me. But whatever rectification he chooses, I accept. Yeah, I gladly accept it. And I'll go on with my devotional service. I'll go on with serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Yeah. And therefore, the Lord's mercy on such a person is fixed. That last verse that you read, Dayabak, inheritance. If somebody has this nice surrendered attitude, you know, Krishna can do anything. I accept whatever the arrangements that he makes for me. You know, then he's guaranteed Dayabak. Such a person is guaranteed to be the eternal associate of the Lord. So this is what we want. We want to get to this position of full surrender. Because it's not an easy thing in one sense. Prabhupada was in Tehran in 1976. I think we were there for 6 or 7 days. And on a morning walk, Prabhupada was talking about this principle of surrender. And he said, actually, he said, every devotee will have to stand a severe test of examination. Every devotee will have to face a severe test of examination. So what does that severe test mean? It means that you are going to be brought to a point where you finish your attachment and involvement in all material activities. Yeah. Generally speaking, we're not very, we like being devotees, we like to do service, but internally, whether or not we're actually surrendering, that's the question. Is it, you know, devotees are like demigods almost compared to the general public, but we're not here to become demigods, yeah, to live in nice buildings. Like Srila Prabhupada used to say sometimes, what wealthy man has the wealth that I have? He said, I have 100 houses all over the world. I can go there anytime I like. I can sit down and be fed the most fabulous dishes. I can be served, you know, by hosts of devotees. What was I going to say? Yeah, so what is the point in being a materialist? If you become a devotee, you have everything at your disposal. Prabhupada had so much at his disposal. Yeah, so even all the servants that he had, he wasn't paying them a farthing. So what are they getting from it? Yeah, what is it that a devotee actually gets? He gets shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. That position is the only position which is beneficial and which is fixed and which cannot be taken away from us by any means or circumstance. Yeah, when we fully surrender to Krishna. But it's not easy to do that. And generally speaking, we always have these anartas. Yeah, we work very hard for Krishna in some ways, but within our hearts, sometimes we're still harboring, you know, a little envy, a little desire. Yeah. So sometimes then in that situation, like with Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada had an idea for spreading Krishna consciousness that he would build up his business. He was in business, he had children, he had to earn a living. But he was thinking now, you know, I'll build this business up into something very big and I'll use the profits for spreading Krishna consciousness. How did he end up? As a beggar. Instead of becoming one of the richest businessmen in India, which had been predicted by an astrologer actually when he was born. So instead of, you know, getting that position, somehow or another everything lost. Yeah, everything was evaporated. At one point, Prabhupada, when he was living in Vrindavan, he didn't even have enough money to buy himself a kurta. I think one of his godbrothers told him, your kurta's torn, you better go and buy yourself something. So he had nothing, yeah, but he was as happy as anything because he was serving Krishna. So he didn't know what was to come. All he knew was that I have to serve the Lord in any circumstance, and he'll maintain me and sustain me. He had that complete faith. So he fully surrendered, Haitukiya Pratiyata. Yeah. And in Bhubaneswar, 1977, we were having a chat. The programs there had finished. That evening, we were due to drive up to the railway station and then come up here to Calcutta. So Prabhupada was reflecting on various things. And he said, actually, I am, you know, this Haituki Apratiyata. He said, I have experience. He said, that was my position. Yeah, that to go on without any hesitation, no interruption. Yeah, he said, when I had that heart attack on the boat, two heart attacks, then the third one was to come the next night. But he said, but that was deferred by Krishna. That came in 1967. So Krishna manipulated things a little bit. And Prabhupada said, this is my own example, you know, of working without motivation and without cessation. He said, even I had that heart attack, still I went on and I did my, you know, service. So he used himself as a nice example of what it means to be a fully surrendered soul. So there's so many examples. There's so many examples of pure devotional service. Devotees who gave up everything, lost everything, but remain fixed in their position. So these are the examples that we want to follow. Yeah, we don't care, or we shouldn't care, you know, where we are, who we're with. Prabhupada was living in, you know, some loft in the Bowery there with some young kid. You can imagine an old man in his 70s, and he's living with this young fellow who's as mad as a hatter because he's taking drugs all day. Yeah. But Prabhupada had to tolerate that. He didn't blame Krishna. What are you putting me in this place for with this madman? He had no complaint, but he had to move. It was so bad. Some other young men that he'd met, they offered to find another place for him. Same thing also with his eating. The first room that Prabhupada had, it was without any windows. It was in some story, I think, 71st Street or 73rd Street, around there. So Prabhupada was living, you know, in this one room, no water. He had to walk a long distance to, there was one man, Dr. Mishra. He was a yoga teacher, so he was doing quite well for himself. He met Prabhupada somehow or another, so he invited him to come and stay at his place sometimes, or at least to cook. So Prabhupada was going there every day, and he was cooking for himself and for Dr. Mishra. And at that time, Dr. Mishra, he had said that he was very, very ill. He said, and Prabhupada's cooking saved him. Yeah, his cooking saved him. So he had a place up in the north of part of New York, some ashram, and he used to invite Prabhupada to come there sometimes. And he'd have his following would come and they would do meditation and stuff like that. And he would ask Prabhupada to chant. But he would never ask him to speak because he was a Mayavadi. Yeah, he was a full-on Mayavadi, and he used to get into these flaming arguments with Srila Prabhupada over the philosophy. So he wouldn't allow Srila Prabhupada to speak. He could chant, or he could cook, but no speaking. So like that, Prabhupada had to tolerate so many things. Yeah. And for him, what an austerity, you know, to live in the same place and have to, you know, get help from this man who was a full-on Mayavadi. Yeah. When Prabhupada came back to India in 1970, and he brought the first real contingent of devotees, a couple of hundred of them, came to Bombay. Prabhupada came into Calcutta with three or four sannyasis. And then a few weeks later, he went over to Bombay. And then they had this cross Maidan Pandal and several others that went up in the north there. So when Prabhupada came, he, you know, sudden, all of a sudden, there were all these pandals and, you know, a lot of activity going on. And Prabhupada was working very, very hard. So when he went to it, there was one pandal, I'm just trying to remember which one, maybe Gorakhpur. Prabhupada went there and the whole stage was filled with Mayavadis. Yeah, all practically 100%, everybody was a Mayavadi. Prabhupada was there with his devotees. And when they, he had some interaction with one of these so-called gurus, and he got very, very angry. I think it was when they tried to, I might be wrong, you have to check this, but one night the devotees did kirtan, maybe the first night on the stage, and nobody had ever seen Westerners, Western Vaishnavs doing kirtan like that. They were all amazed, the crowd were in ecstasy, and the devotees reciprocated by jumping down from the stage and doing the kirtan, and you know, like a Harinam, what do you call that, Naga kirtan, through the crowd, and the crowd were going wild. Yeah, they'd never seen anything like it. They were so happy. So the devotees went around, Prabhupada sat on the stage, waited till the devotees came back up, and he said, "I don't have to say anything." He said, "This is real, you know, Vaishnavism. This is real spiritual life." The next day, the organizers of the festival, they wanted the devotees to do the same thing again. And the devotees didn't want to do it that night. They were happy to stay on the stage and just chant. So these people started trying to pull them off the stage and get them to chant in the midst of the crowd. And, you know, it was annoying the devotees. And Prabhupada saw what was going on. And he went towards these people with his cartels, crashing his cartels right next to them to drive them away and stop them from, you know, drawing the devotees off the stage. And in these pandals, the ones that were not organized by us, but which were organized by third parties, you know, usually what they would do is they would have the Mayavadis speak first. And then Prabhupada was asked to speak at the end, because they knew that as soon as Prabhupada's finished speaking and the Western Vaishnavas are not there anymore, everybody's just going to go. Nobody would be interested in what these other guys have to say. So they wanted Prabhupada to wait until the very end and then speak so that they could keep the crowd. But Prabhupada refused. Then, you know. So anyway, the point that I'm making is that in New York, by force of circumstance, Prabhupada had to stay with people, you know, that were in a completely different realm, you know, than him. One was a Mayavadi. There was this boy that was living, you know, that he was living with in this room. In this loft, who was half crazy on intoxicants. Yeah, there were other people he stayed with. They were keeping meat in the refrigerator, and Prabhupada had to keep his food in there. So he had to suffer so many problems, but he never once felt unenthusiastic. He was always thinking how to preach. He would go on bus trips around the city. Sometimes he would get on a train, and he would just let the train go to the very end of its line, and then he would come back again on the same train. What was he doing? He was watching and observing the American people and trying to figure out how to connect and communicate Krishna consciousness to them. So he had so many, you know, problems, and what to speak about his health when he had that heart attack. But it was his enthusiasm was undiminished. So in that way, Prabhupada told us that if it wasn't, he told me in Bombay in 1976, at the end of the year that we were there for a couple of weeks. And one morning Prabhupada told me, he said that he was, he said he was always enthusiastic. He said, if it was not for this enthusiasm, he said, then how could I have gone to the West, to your country? See, but I had this enthusiasm to follow the instructions of my spiritual master. I didn't know whether it would be successful or not successful. But he wanted it, so I was trying. So this is, you know, pure devotional service. No anxiety, no disappointment, no loss of enthusiasm. Yeah, but just simply execute the instructions of his spiritual master and leave the rest to Krishna. So this is something that we have to practice. Vaidhi Bhakti means that there's that mixture. Yeah, we do have desires within our hearts. We have problems sometimes due to our lack of surrender or due to our lack of vision of what Krishna wants us to do. But if we continue on, you know, under the instruction and guidance that Prabhupada has given us, eventually all those anartas, they'll disappear. Yeah, so it might happen in a gradual way. It could happen like Bali Maharaj, you know, in a more immediate way. Yeah, where practically speaking, within a moment, everything that he had, all the following that he had, gone. Just in one moment. But still he had that presence of mind not to become bewildered. I read one time about a hurricane that had hit some part of Miami or, you know, Florida. They're very prone to that kind of weather. So the newspaper man was interviewing one of the volunteers that had gone there to help people, you know, put their lives back together. And so this man was saying, well, you know, here's this fellow. We found him. He was sitting on the curb at the side of the road. He'd been there for 3 days because the hurricane had blown his entire house away. He had nothing left but an empty plot of land. And the man was so stunned, he sat there for 3 days, couldn't move. So the so-called rescuers, they said, well, so, you know, we fed him and we clothed him. We gave him a few possessions. We found him a place to stay. Now he can start rebuilding. Yeah, he can start rebuilding his house. So what? For what? So you can go through it all again? Yeah, if they'd been real friends, they would have told him, look, now you know. You know, this is all an illusion. That wasn't really your house. You know, whatever you had that you thought were your possessions, they don't belong to you. They've just been blown away. One breath of Krishna, all gone. But no, oh, we'll help you rebuild, you know, put up another new house, get more artifacts, and be a loser again. So, you know, material life is for losers. Yeah, spiritual life, that's for those who want full success. Yeah, that's to give us the happiness, you know, that kind of happiness which will never be taken away from us. So in this way then, Bali Maharaj was not perturbed. And because he was not perturbed, then gradually his followers also fell into line. So, just one last point about this Tenukampam Shushamikshamano. It's a very important verse for the devotees. Yeah, to accept any condition of life as being a special arrangement for me to improve and to surrender further to Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants to do to me, let him do it. I accept it. I'm fully his servant. That was Prabhupada also. Fully surrendered. Okay, it's getting late. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. What does one do when Mayavadis come to ISKCON temple as devotees in the dress of a devotee and then trick?
I can't hear clearly. What does one do?
What does one do when Mayavadis come to the ISKCON temples like devotees who are usually tricking and using magical spells on others, other devotees?
What does one do? Depends on the situation. Yeah, we've had all, let's say New Vrindavan. In the early days of New Vrindavan, some gang of motorcyclists, like Hell's Angel kinds, they came, they had guns, they broke so many things in the temple, and you know, they were threatening the devotees with guns. They even had Kirtananda Maharaj dig his own grave. Yeah, somehow I don't know all the details, but one or two things. So Prabhupada afterwards, when he heard about what had gone on, he told the devotees, buy some guns. If they come again, kill them. So that's one way of dealing with demons. It depends on the situation. If you're dealing with a demon like Dr. Misra, a Mayavadi, just got, you know, the wrong idea about everything, and you can't argue with them either because they won't listen, give them prasadam, let them see the deities, let them hear the chanting. That's the general way that, you know, we deal with non-devotees that may come and cause a problem. So it depends on what situation you're in, what method you use to rectify it. Is that what you were asking?
I wanted to know if there is any proper system to tackle that within ISKCON.
Any what?
Any system.
I'm sorry, I just can't tell what you're saying.
I wanted to know if there is any system within ISKCON to tackle this situation, because these are the days of organized crime. People organize crime against actors, even devotees also, well-to-do devotees who are working on the basis of purity and not on strength, because they are usually humble and meek.
I'm sorry, can somebody repeat what he's saying in English? What did he say?
I was saying that these are the days of organized crime. People organize crime, governmental crime. So within ISKCON, if there is any system to tackle this kind of situations where they organize crimes, stalk devotees, even they stalk actors nowadays, actors or any politician, anything can happen nowadays. The common people are not very educated usually. It is happening even outside of India, actually, mostly. Nowadays in India also it has come.
You're talking about organized crime?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a conversation that Prabhupada had with a Chicago police officer. I think in 1975 he went there. There was something printed in the newspaper, yeah, about crime and how to deal with it. And Prabhupada had a long conversation with this police officer, and he explained to him that unless you actually purify people, your crime rate will continue. Yeah. Our program is devotional service. It's the same when he was in Australia. State minister for recreation and something else, he came to Prabhupada and, you know, he asked him that so many young men and women, you know, their lives are disturbed, they're doing a lot of kind of criminal activity, drugs and things like that. How can we help them? What's your program for helping them? Prabhupada said, yes, any one of them, bring them here to our temple. Let them get up in the morning for Mangal Arati, take prasadam, do devotional service, then they'll be rectified. So this minister, he couldn't figure out you know, what the benefit of being a devotee is. He wanted some what they call secular answer, where, you know, we had a program to try to change a person's character, but without, you know, the bells and whistles, as they say, without, you know, the overt religious aspects. So there's no solution. Yeah, if somebody's misguided, if they, you know, misbehaving, the real solution is to engage them in devotional life. But these people don't want to know that.
Like in the,
they want the kingdom of God without God. That's the problem.
In the outside governments, they have home ministry to put the thieves and people who are not behaving civically. Not behaving civically outside, they have home ministry. So within ISKCON, do they have any system? Supreme Court, High Court, and police stations, like well-trained experts to deal with these kind of problems?
First of all, I'm trying to put in context your question with what we were just been talking about. I can't figure out what you're saying. Come to me after the class. We'll talk. It's either the booming, I'm deaf, or it's the booming of the microphone, or I can't figure out what you're talking about.
Thank
organized
you.
Crime and any other questions? All right, we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.